What's up, everybody? This is Carrick with ACG, and welcome to an aimless podcast. Sit on down and let's tell lies to each other, just like our parents used to. First of all, I want to say this has been amazing. The outpouring of support for the podcast in particular and just for the different things that I post has blown me away. I really do appreciate it. It's been phenomenal. I do want to warn you, if you're a follower on YouTube, I did just find out this morning that YouTube fucked up everybody's subscription button. So make sure you go there and hit all notifications because a bunch of people didn't get informed about the Doom or Half-Life videos that I did. So what are we going to talk about today? Well, today I'm going to just try to keep you company a little bit in isolation day, whatever it may be for you. This morning, I asked a bunch of people what they would like me to talk about, and this has been the largest selection of topics and things that people want discussed that I've seen so far, and questions, just everything that's popped up. So I'm going to jump in here. I'm going to answer questions from Patreon. I'm going to answer questions from Facebook, from the Discord, and from Twitter. There are a ton of these, as well as different topics that people want me to cover. So this is going to be a fairly heady podcast. I don't know exactly how long it'll be, but if you get a chance, you might want to go grab a frost. Cool one. If you've still got electricity, sit on down and let's begin this. There's literally just so much here, but I want to talk first about the Konami rumors. So originally there were rumors about Sony possibly buying the IPs for the various different Konami properties, including PT or Silent Hill, that kind of thing. So one of the reasons why we didn't really discuss this too much is because the people I had talked to had said that it was complete bullshit. And I just sat back and was like, well, there's not much to say. We'll just sort of wait and see how this turns out, because you get some sources sometimes that are right, some are wrong. And I honestly do believe that some people are just out there sourcing things and then telling the same people the same stuff under different pseudonyms. So a lot of times I sort of wait to see what leaks go where and to whom, to sort of see if maybe some of us have all got the same source. And that, as everybody knows, anybody who does trust sources, you never want to do. So you want to really keep this kind of stuff to a minimum when it comes to new videos and that kind of thing. So Konami came forward with a video and said, yep, it's not true. I think for the most part, I'm just going to go with that as being exactly what's going on. None of that was true. You could say that there is a chance that perhaps somebody came forward and said, we want one of your IPs, which is not unheard of in the video game world, where one company will say, hey, we'd love to work on this IP that you're not working on. That could definitely happen. And maybe they got spread into something bigger, or maybe a deal fell apart. But for right now, I'm just going to say, at least for me, this is a kiboshed rumor. But I do want to talk about something that I got to remind people about, which is the timing situation that is occurring. This is from somebody who's lived through the bullshit of multiple generations, and it's something that you as a gamer need to think of. Rarely would you invest in, let's say, a gun manufacturer if 3 years from now there was going to be a particular gun that you might possibly get. But with video games, that actually does happen, and it's quite creepy to me, and I find that it's really a falsehood that continues to spread, and I want to make sure that I get it out there and make sure to remind people that you really should be getting maybe within the year kind of thing, where you look at titles that are available within the year. If you're thinking 2 or 3 years out, the entire world can change at that point. Anybody who lost or bought Last Guardian for the PS3 knows exactly what I'm talking about. That entire generation, or a large deal of that generation, was actually based around that game in particular coming to the PS3, and it didn't. Now, I'm not saying that they didn't try. It's not about trying. It's not about putting resources in. It's about what actually comes out. As a gamer, you really shouldn't be investing in something that's 2, 3, 4 years out. You really should be looking at something and say, what can I get out of it today? It isn't an investment, and they're not investing in you. A business's sole real reason for existing is to get as much out of you with as little as they can offer. That's pretty much the way it is. And additionally, you should be going out there and looking at things and saying, what's the most I can get for the least amount of money? Now, when it comes to this investing thing that pops up, I think this is also what feeds into a lot of the strange brand fanboyism that we see, where people are feeling invested in them, but they're not invested in you. None of these companies are saving babies from floods. And some people may say, oh, well, you know what? This company does more than this company. That's absolutely true. It is true. And what they have identified is that there was a gap there, that if they offer more, they will get a certain type of consumer. It's not like they magically are saying, we're going to offer more for absolutely no reason. They know that a positive outcome of offering more is getting from a particular consumer segment more back. How do I know this? Because I've worked in this fucking field and I've known it for years. And this is something that you shouldn't believe the lies. You shouldn't believe something like this. When Konami, or you hear a rumor about Konami giving away their IPs, it doesn't matter if it's to Nintendo. It doesn't matter if it was to fucking Sega and they're releasing the Dreamcast 2. Please, Sega, release the Dreamcast 2. you really should not identify with those things so far in the future. You will end up getting burned. And additionally, we don't even know if they'll be good. There are only a couple developers, I would say in my own personal case, perhaps five, maybe seven or eight, that I would trust to possibly always deliver good content. The rest, almost every single developer has some bad games in the repertoire. That is normal. So again, just try to remember that when you see these kind of rumors. And speaking of rumors, here's another one. We've got that whole PS5 versus Xbox thing, and now there's some different discussion about DirectX 12 and what that's going to offer to the Xbox. I would say, once again, you need to hold on to all of your hope and just see what you get offered with any of these. Hen says he's on Twitter. He says, any thoughts on DirectX 12? Or are you playing the PSO2 open beta? So my thoughts on DirectX 12 is it's awesome. We always want to see improvements, but we do not know if any or what developers will actually utilize those improvements. That's one of the things. You can give 50 people an amazing race car. All 50 people will utilize that race car in a different way. Remember that. And if you give all 50 a better race car, it does not mean all 50 will improve their times. When it comes to the PS2 open beta, I am not playing it right now. I really like it, but guys, I am swamped. I'm reviewing some games I'm sure you know of and doing some streams and doing this podcast. So I've just been absolutely swamped. Ended up coming out of Doom straight into Half-Life Alyx. And it's just been one of those things where I have to sort of separate my time. Another question on Twitter, Creative Monster says, because of the virus, do you think the gaming industry will get stronger sales-wise? Or is it a possibility we could see developer and publisher layoffs and games getting delayed? So I've stated this before. There is one game that I was told was delayed by a very trustworthy source, and it was a fairly big game, not Cyberpunk. I'm actually quite surprised it hasn't been announced. I was waiting. I thought Monday somebody's going to pop off and say this game was delayed, and it hasn't popped up yet. I don't quite know if that data is wrong or if the company is waiting. I'm actually assuming the company is waiting because this person is almost 100%, I would say, with anything they tell me is quite rare. But again, that's not really here nor there. It's just one of those kind of things when it comes to the industry. So that's one of the reasons why I just sort of only bring it up in the podcast and don't really spread it around that's something that I've heard of. I've just been surprised by it. I think we will see developer and publisher layoffs, especially if it continues. One of the reasons why is while a lot of these people are going to work remotely, some of these companies are developed and designed to not work remotely. Their entire tree of organization and their entire way in which they work is not exactly set up that way. My apologies. I had to pause it for a second. That was a Facebook message. People are posting questions on the Facebook. Sorry about that. So yes, we will. And as we continue on, you'll see a restructuring of developers and publishers. You will, however, see some layoffs that will certainly happen. Now, the possibility, or will we get stronger sales-wise? I think you absolutely will get stronger sales-wise in particular games. And we will certainly see more people staying inside. We'll see the internet structure be not necessarily repaired, but sort of held up and adjusted and optimized. This is a situation where it's entirely bad. I want to make sure this is clear. I hate this. This is horrible for everybody involved, people being laid off. I don't really think there's anything out there other than scalpers that are really having an improved way of life right now because of this. However, when we come out of it, there may be some improvements to how things are done where people look at a situation and say, we were in a dogmatic role and a systematic way in which we structured things we did not need to actually do. But because nothing broke us of that, we didn't break away from it. And now because something has, including the virus, we can now look at it in a different light. This is something that a lot of, let's say, life coaches will teach you. It's a lot of things that good sports coaches will teach you, that if you're in a pattern, it's very difficult to come out of that pattern unless something very violent occurs. It's one of the reasons why heart attack victims, people who end up having heart attacks, come out and they end up losing a bunch of weight. But they didn't lose a bunch of weight for 25 years prior to that. And a lot of times, and this is because I do have people in the medical health industry who I live with and who I deal with all the time will tell you, even though those people may have had tons of obesity related or health related issues prior, and humans really are that frog in the warm water that goes up to a boil. By the way, that's actually not a true thing, and it does not happen that way. But you know what? It always sounded like a good myth. But with humans, we are that way, right? We know a lot of people. We know a lot of people stay married and they'll be like, divorce is too hard. And then maybe the person cheats on them and they're like, divorce isn't too hard. Bye, bitch. And they take off. And they needed that. They needed it. Or they needed that huge fight. Or they needed something. Or maybe they were like, yeah, this relationship's too hard. And then something happened and they realized it's not too hard. I need to be in the, I love this person. And maybe they were living away from each other and they're like, hey, let's move, you know, to be near each other because I love you or I like you or I want to continue filming amateur porn, whatever it may be. So I think when you look at this kind of thing, we're going to see a lot of adjustments. And the longer it goes, the bigger those adjustments will be. I think that's fairly logical. Doesn't really require any knowledge from me to say that. But I do know that we're already seeing some changes as we move forward. Unfinished Sentence on Twitter says, I'm seeing a lot of mixed opinions on Doom Eternal surpassing Doom 2016. Do you personally believe it was better? I would say that no, I would say that they're about equal. They do things just slightly different. Doom 2016, I really enjoyed, right? I really liked it. And I would say Doom Eternal has a bit of an issue sometimes with its pacing. However, Doom Eternal was also uniquely fun. And it was also a game where I felt that the difficulty wasn't necessarily harder than Doom 2016. It was pretty tight at times, and there was a character I hated, the Marauder, sons of bitches. But for some reason, I don't remember it. I feel better about the overall Doom Eternal difficulty. It works better for me than Doom 2016 did for some reason. And I didn't think Doom 2016 was bad or anything like that. Like I said, I absolutely love it. But I think they offer a slightly different thing. And here is what we've finally got, guys. We've got two games in a row that are an evolution of something. And I would personally say that that is exactly what you want in gaming. You don't always say, I want a revolution in my girlfriend, so I'm switching out girlfriends or boyfriend or significant other. Sometimes you just want an evolution as you both grow. And that's how a good sequel works in games. It doesn't always have to change everything up. And it doesn't always have to be a, oh, this was better than this. Games were different. The platforms were different. Things have adjusted since those two have come out. I think that Doom Eternal, the best way to discuss it is to say it is an absolutely excellent addition to that franchise. Speaking of franchises, AC says, what is your top three video game franchises? So I don't really do top videos very well. And one of the reasons why is because it's sort of what you just listened to with Doom Eternal. A lot of times I'm just like, you know what? At a point when the game is worth it, right? At a point when a movie is worth enjoying, at the point when sex is amazing, I don't really necessarily have to say this is an 8.5 and this is a 9.5. First of all, I do want to say that. I just don't numerically score anything. And numerical scores sort of feed into top three video game franchises, since that's a numerical, you know, number of video game franchises that you're going to discuss. So I'll just say I did enjoy Mass Effect until 3's ending, which really did sour it for me. Baldur's Gate would certainly be in the video game franchises that I think has continued and has had no issues. Sorry, my dog is absolutely having a nightmare. Give me 1 second. Lau. Hang on 1 second. Lau, you're having a dream. Sorry about that. That scared the shit out of me. So those franchises, Baldur's Gate in particular, I really like. And I like the side stories, the DLC. I think everything that they've done is de facto incredible. Other than that, I really wouldn't be able to give you any other two. And that's not to try to get out of that conversation. It's just that I don't really think of things in that way. And once they get to a certain point, I just cherish that they're there. And that's all that really matters. So Demon Phoenix on Twitter also says, should games have difficulty settings or should they just have one difficulty to experience? It's completely up to the developer. It's sort of like a person who writes a sci-fi novel. Are you going to say, hey, damn it, you needed to write fantasy? Or what if their sci-fi is hard sci-fi and not the softer, more romantic sci-fis that you might have got with Perry Rhodan or with Flash Gordon? You can't really do that kind of thing. I will say, I get why people say difficulty settings should be set down so everybody can get into them. However, I do want to discuss something, and that's the discussion between accessibility and actually being able to continue to enjoy things. Accessibility really means the ability to interact with it at all. I believe that accessibility is vital. The adaptive controller is fantastic from Microsoft. Anything like that, those are spectacular and need to continue. Those allow for accessibility into a title and make it so that we can all at least get some access to it. Once you move into there, then you're looking at difficulty. And I am personally not a huge fan of demanding somebody adjust their difficulty. That to me seems very weird. And if you talk to anybody who's worked in test and QA, you talk to any developers, just randomly, generically adjusting the health or the ability of damage for somebody to do is not a small deal. That's why sometimes you get difficulty settings, even though I hate them, patched in later games. So I would say I do not think that they should have more. I think that it would be nice if we got a couple of these titles, though, that weren't so Dark Soul-ish. And let me describe that. So I was playing Neo, right? And everybody knows this story probably already if you follow the podcast. I was doing a early version of this game. And I don't know if it was broken or what, but I wasn't seeing Revenants and I wasn't seeing hireable AI. And so I got to a boss and I could not defeat him. I posted a picture, by the way, of me prior to the game coming out for release. I posted a picture of how many times I'd fought this guy. 140 times, and I beat him once. Now, there's multiple reasons why this happened. One of them being that I'm stubborn and I chose this weapon. Two, I didn't have a breaking point like a lot of gamers would have where they're like, fuck, man, I need to switch weapons. I was like, nope, sticking with the same weapon. I was stubborn. I had time and I was like, this is the way I'm going to do it, right? And I think that that's totally fine. It's the way it works. But I was playing it and I was never actually frustrated. I was a little bit numb to it. I was like, okay, so I died, you know, 95 times. I can't hire AI. I didn't even, dude, at that time, I don't even know if they told me in the preview data that there was AI to hire at that point. So I didn't even know it was really missing until prior to the review, a patch came and I went online and it popped up. So I was playing this. And by the way, those popping up is actually, you know, a part of my preliminary review that went out. I did review the game with those working, but it's just prior to that, they weren't. So I did all this and I don't really get too upset by it. I think though, when you look at it, it might be something that I would like to see a little less of these because I feel a lot of people could have enjoyed Neo if it was a little bit easier. And there's even a couple Neo and Sekiro difficulty mods on Mod Nexus. I do think that it would be nice if we got a game that had these immersive, unique worlds that weren't so difficult. But I also do believe that the difficulty is one of the reasons why they're extended, take so long, and why a lot of people like them so much. There is a dick measuring contest that does happen at some point, or whatever orifice or whatever item or whatever sexual reproductive organ you want to talk about. There is a measuring thing where people are like, I'm cooler than you. You'll get it when you do a review. You'll be like, hey man, this was pretty hard. And people will be like, I beat it. Yesterday, didn't even turn my monitor on, beat it twice, didn't even plug a controller in. You're like, yeah, whatever, jackass. Some people are that good, though. We've seen people with the guitar controller beat bosses. Of course, after 100,000 times of failing, we only see the successes, right? But I would like to see a game like Neo come out where maybe it is a little bit more easy for people to get into. And then I jumped into Doom. Doom on its easy mode will still slay a lot of first-person shooter players who, let's say, aren't necessarily incredibly good at a game like that. And sometimes I've been like, man, you know, I don't necessarily want the game to have an added difficulty, but I sort of wish some game or I wish there were at this point a few less of those because I've just played a lot of those recently, guys. When you look at those kind of games, Star Wars did it. Now, Star Wars had no reason. I think Star Wars boldly made a really bad mistake with the bonfire system in Star Wars because Star Wars doesn't make any sense. You're not actually grinding or improving anything in Star Wars. You're quite literally just repeating the same bad guys. They missed the boat entirely in that plan. No lie, they missed the boat. If you go look at the way in which these games are developed, if you go look at Gamma Sutra or GDC and people talk about Dark Souls who are developers, that's actually one of the major bits of those kind of games. Star Wars didn't have it. It just did it to do it, right? And it didn't really feel good. It didn't as good as it could have is what I'm saying. So I would like a few less of these games to come out like this. You've got your Surge and your Neo and your Star Wars and I don't know. It's probably because I feel like I would like to talk to other people about these cool games and I can't because only myself, maybe a couple reviewers and a couple, maybe one or two of my close friends play these kind of games. And I just so enjoy talking about games. That's probably what it is. I just wish there was a little bit easier chance or a little bit more of a chance for some of these amazing titles to be interacted with my normal friends. Next up, Smeg and the Heads. Awesome name. Here's a topic for you. Should companies that do limited print runs, limited runs, super rare, be announcing new products when no one is working and has no money? Oh, because of the virus. I'm sorry. I read that wrong. Okay, I get what you're saying. Yes, of course. First of all, there are many people working, and there are people who, even in my Discord, where I posted and said, hey, listen, guys, if you guys got to drop the Patreon, because I love having people on Patreon, but I'm like, I get it. And they're like, no, man, I'm doing completely fine. And so, yes, most of us are feeling that crunch, myself included, horribly. But I don't think that stops companies like Limited Run from saying, hey, if you want one of these, we're still going to allow them to be offered. You may have to find different ways to get them. But I don't think the entire world maybe needs to stop going outside and coughing on produce. But it doesn't necessarily need to stop the occasional Limited Run. I don't find that really a requirement. And I've seen some people who've said some stuff where it's like distasteful for this or that. And I posted a shirt link to merchandise yesterday, but I happened to get new shirt designs. So I was like, shit, man, this feels so weird. So I was just like, well, I'm going to make a joke and I'm going to post it anyway, because, you know, I don't know. And I ended up selling a bunch of shirts to people who are not affected right now. And I was like, okay, well, I sort of get it. But it's also uncomfortable. I think that's up to whoever is doing it and what they want to do. But I get your point. Ray Brutal says, what do you want to see at the start of next gen? More accessibility, the accessibility controller to be, better prepared and easier to get items for than it is currently, because it's actually a little bit difficult. I would like to see them really identify the patching process for games and make sure that we as gamers are not seeing huge bandwidth sizes. Now, you guys know me. I'm the first one to defend, or at the very least explain, what goes on in a game with patching, where, like, let's say the game's development and the way the engine is done, to patch the game, the entire game needs to be reloaded. A lot of people bitch about network and how big a download is without actually knowing exactly what goes into it. Hey, Ming, quiet. I'm just not even going to try to remove those. You guys know how it is. We're all in quarantine. I'm here stuck with four dogs that are absolutely trying to figure out what in the fuck is going on. They're like, they're home all the time. I think the dogs subtly want us to be gone. I woke up this morning and I went out onto my couch, and one of my dogs was quite literally sleeping on the couch like a human does. And I was like, when I'm not here, does he also like wear my shoes around? You can see that picture on my Twitter. So anyway, I think when it comes down to it, those are the things I would like to see improve. I would like to see them maybe go into a little bit bigger expansions than so much DLC that we get. I think we would all want that, and it doesn't require a new gen to see that though. Next thing up, Chris says, do you believe Metal Gear 5 was a love letter to Rambo 3? Holy shit, that's a question and a half. Do I believe that Metal Gear 5 was a love letter? I think that almost everything he did or does is a love letter to something else. He's a lot like Quentin Tarantino, where that kind of stuff is sort of set out for other things. So yeah, I would think, I think that's actually a fair, that's actually a fair, you know, summary of what that probably was. That's a good question though. It took me a second. And Shadow asks, how crucial is replayability in video games? Is it okay to make a game that is just to be played only once? Yes, it absolutely is. So the easiest way to describe this is sometimes I buy a CD and I listen to the music a couple times and then I don't listen to it again. Sometimes I buy a book and I read it once, never read it again. And other times I read it a ton of times. That's just the way things are taken in. Some TV shows I jump into and I watch once or I watch a ton of times. The difference with a game and all those things is, and I'm sure people are getting ready to leap and respond to this, the difference between those and games is the interactivity. However, if you want to make a game where maybe its interactivity is you feeling like you're making the choices, a la Telltale or something like that, even though they say there's replayability there, and some of those I didn't replay them, it's a choice on the gamer's standpoint. Additionally, a bunch of replayability does not mean everybody will replay them. Also, no replayability factors at all does not mean someone will not replay them. I have had people that I've talked to who have played the most basic games hundreds and hundreds of times just because they like the world, and there's not really any variation. So what you're really talking about is an individual choice versus the company's choice to deliver something. And I feel that there are so many companies delivering these titles that someone will always have your back with the kind of title that you want. Additionally, just because you may think it's going to be replayable, may not turn out that way once you get it, and vice versa. This is one of the things that comes up a lot of times, is people sort of put some kind of prose or terminology on something that really has no ability for anybody else to hit. Let me explain that. So every time I post a video, people post my videos in other places. And by the way, I want to say I love you guys for this. People are spreading it on you know, Reddit, which helps. Guys, if you have a Reddit account and you can post one of my reviews anywhere, it absolutely helps. If I felt any emotion other than hate and just vile disgust towards people, I would shed a tear in just happiness for you guys. You guys are awesome. However, every time somebody does, there's usually one person who will say one of two things. And this stuns me because it's the dumbest thing to say. First of all, they'll say the redundant question. Am I the only one? Okay, you're on the internet. You're not the only one. You're quite literally not the only one. You could eat a cat while killing a human, while driving a car, and somehow jump in a creek in that car, and I bet you $1 million somebody's done it before you. You are, and the world is not as individual or unique as you think you are. Every single person out there who says, am I the only one? No, you're not. Right away. We should say that right away. So you get those, but you also get people who say, I wish Carrick would joke more or joke less. There's a problem there. I don't know what more or less is to you. I have no absolute clue. What I do know for me is what's fun. What is fun for me is what matters. If it's not fun for me, I'm not going to continue to do it. And then those people who do like it won't like it anymore or won't have anything to like. And so what you get is this weird thing where people apply terminology to stuff that's very soft and really has no basis on the creation of something. And I'm not saying Shadow's doing this at all. I'm just saying this is what happens. Is that a lot of times you just take in what you take in. It's one of the reasons why if somebody doesn't like my videos, I'll say, well, go watch somebody else. Because there's so many reviewers. Why, you know, you'll have people say, well, they should all be the same. No, they absolutely shouldn't. We'd all kill ourselves. If everything was the same, every show would be a CW show. Like, it'd be ridiculous. That's not the way the world should work. And the same way with games. Replayability and all that kind of stuff. Much of that, strangely enough, is not decided by the company. It's decided by the individual. If you don't believe me, look at your own library of titles right now. Look over, sit back. You're probably in your boxers like I am. Sit back and look over at your list of titles. And I bet you there are a number of titles there that is the exact opposite in your thought pattern of what you assumed it would be, whether it be you thought it was going to be more replayable or you thought it was going to be less. Usually what occurs is if you find it enjoyable, and it's the kind of enjoyment that allows for replayability, you will replay it regardless of what the company does. So that is the Twitter questions. A lot of Twitter questions. I want to thank you guys all for posting those. I will check one more time before we leave on Twitter for any additional questions there. So I'm going to go to Facebook. And don't worry, we are going to talk about topics. I just want to get these out of the way. I always tell people I'll get all these out of the way. We'll discuss them. And since we know some of these will be new, I figured it might be worth it. All right. So next up, posts. Oh, sorry. This is, I said Facebook. This will actually be Patreon. I'm doing this all in real time. I figured, you know what? Let's just do this shit. All right. What do we have? Posts, please. Published. There we go. Sorry. Patrons a little ugly in the back end. Somebody got mad at me a couple months ago and they're like, man, you didn't respond to my Patreon or whatever, which I tried to. But I was all, dude, you should see the back end of Patreon. It's so messy. You guys would not believe what the email system looks back there. All right, Deaction Saxon, this is from Patreon, says, what console or video game made the biggest impact on you as a youth? Can you still go back today and enjoy it? Biggest impact. Sega Saturn, because Sega Saturn came out and wasn't supposed to come out for 6 months. I was with Cadiz, who's in our Discord, a longtime personal friend of mine since 95. And I've said this story, so I'm going to truncate it. We drive up, Sega Saturn is on the shelf and it says in stock. And I'm like, that makes no actual fucking sense at all. So I go over and I ask the person, I'm like, is that really in stock? And they're all like, yeah. And I did some wheeling and dealing to get the money because this was back then, it was not cheap. And by the way, people who think, oh, this shouldn't be more expensive or this shouldn't be more expensive, bullshit. Man, I still have receipts for like Ghouls and Ghosts for the Sega Saturn, $59.99. Some of that shit just hasn't gone up in price. And it was expensive as fuck back then. So I look at the Saturn, I'm like, let's get it. We got it and it had Daytona, right? It had Clockwork Knight and it had, wasn't Sega Rally, Virtual Fighter. We get home And it was just the enjoyment of playing this thing, just the sheer unmitigated surprise. It was the best Christmas birthday surprise ever without being a Christmas or birthday, right? That kind of stuff just doesn't happen. Everything is cultivated and timed and resourced and fucking researched that you can't get a surprise anymore. How often do we see a surprise? Doom Eternal going early for people due to the virus is probably the biggest surprise gaming has got in years, other than the occasional, hey, there's this title being worked on. But most of the time, everybody knows because there's some leaker who's leaked it 6 months prior. So that to me was the biggest impact. It was mind-blowing to get something early. And it was a step up above that because I was coming off of the Genesis. And even though the Saturn wasn't incredibly powerful compared to the PS1, it was such a stunning change right then and so early. So we got to play those early. And it made me a Sega, I was always a Sega fan, but it made me a true Sega fan just because it was one of those things that it just forcibly becomes a part of your life. Nova Light says, what gamer games you only like, but everybody else says it sucks. Advent Rising, I bring up a lot. But I would say I like it, but I know it sucks, at least control scheme wise. I think a lot of games we know suck and we probably don't really even argue with it, but we still like it. That's sort of the scheme that, the situation that I'm in is that a lot of the titles I like, I know are probably not the best, but I like them anyway. That's one of the reasons why when I tell people, if I say something's worth getting, unless the company's done something terrible, which I talk about in the review, and somebody's like, no, it's not. It's definitely worth buying. You said it's a never touch, but I think it's worth getting. I'll just be like, whatever, man. Like, whatever. I mean, doesn't matter. People are stuck at home right now. People are fucking having to figure out how to get, checks for money and food and having to fight off fucking scalpers. Do you think I give a fuck if two people argue on a game review? Of course not. So that's the way I've always felt, though. Another game that I've... Alpha Protocol is genuinely sort of considered one of those crunchy classics. I always say a crunchy classic, as in it's a classic game, but it was really crunchy at the time, janky, So I would say not many. I think Advent Rising fits that. Mike Sharp says, trying to get my crew together for something other than Battle Royale with us all locked indoors. What's a great underappreciated co-op game for a virtual meetup? I think any of the Ubisoft games that allow for co-op are great. I'm not a big fan of them, by the way. But that's the thing is, a lot of people, I think, want you to draw a line in the sand and be like, not only do you need to agree with me, but you need to never touch this game. And I just don't feel that way. So let's say you like Far Cry and you want to jump in there, even though I haven't liked a couple of those, whatever, right? Those are there. Go free, just go out and get them. I'm a big fan of free MMOs. I've talked about it till I'm fucking blue in the face, man. Star Trek, Neverwinter, DC Universe Online, and Secret World. I have well over 5,000 hours in all of those games combined. And those to me are perfect co-op games. Two or three people just get together and say, hey, you know what? I'm bored. What do you want to do? And they're great because they don't cost anything. But I would say, yeah, the any of those Ubisoft games that are just great to jump into co-op for a virtual meetup. I think without knowing exactly what kind of games, Mike, that you and your friends like, I see the Battle Royale, which is why I mentioned Ubisoft first, because the majority of them are shooter games. But yeah, it's a weird time, guys. It's a weird time. And this is a great time, by the way, a great time. I'm so excited for this because, guys, it's not just about your fucking deep log of games, right? It's not. This is a time when you might want to try something out that's completely different. It's not just looking at your backlog. We've all looked at our backlog. And in a way, I think this is like what we've talked about prior in this very video, where a lot of times you look at something and you're just like, yeah, I'll get to it. But the backlog doesn't really change. You see the same name at the start, same name at the end. It's all alphabetical. And you're like, ah, fuck it. You got an A and a Z. And whatever's in the middle, sometimes you just sort of whitewash. You just sort of ignore. But what I'm saying is, this might be a time to try something completely new. It might be a time to go to an older title. It might be a time to try a free MMO when you have never tried it before. It might be a time to do Game Pass if you have not done that before. So that's what I'm saying, is that there's a lot there that doesn't just include your own backlog. Timmy Zinni says, gaming news is always bad news recently. GameStop execs being dickheads, publishers bending rules or breaking games, plenty before that too. Comments and social media are no better, basically looking for a reason to break out pitchforks and complain about something. So what are some of your favorite uplifting happy moments from gaming, either stories you've heard or experienced? First of all, this is me clapping for Tim. That's either Tim or Timmy. Brother, you rock. First of all, he rocks for one reason, which is that he brought up both sides of this equation. Because a lot of people would just bring up the business side. And they wouldn't bring up that fans can be abso-fucking-lutely revolting. And companies can be revolting. But I think to describe one, you have to describe the other, because that's the only way to get a holistic part of the conversation. So bravo to you. What are some uplifting, happy moments from gaming that you've heard? Well, let's see. So, I mean, there's been a lot with gaming itself. I'm trying not to... There's been some that personally impacted me. You didn't really say you've heard or experienced... Well, I can say experience myself. This is uplifting for me, but it sounds like I'm tooting my own horn, so I don't want to say it. I'll just say somebody said something about the reviews when they were sick. They were watching the reviews, and the humor, they got the humor, and they enjoyed it, and it helped them through a tough time. I guess that's all I'll talk about that. And that was... That's a phenomenal feeling. It's a phenomenal feeling when you give somebody a hug and they needed it, right? I mean, if you're not a sociopath, which maybe I am, but overall, I can still tell. Like, give my mom a hug. I can tell she's like, she needed a hug, that kind of thing. So with games, with something you create, something you do, let's say you draw well and somebody's having a bad day and you draw them and they like it, you know, and they're like, hey, man, this is awesome. Those are amazing moments, and that's involved in gaming. But I would say uplifting, happy. I mean, for me, it's just the laughter that comes from co-op. It's the stupid moments. It's the amazing times that we engage with all the time in gaming, and that, for me, I feel really do color my entire feeling towards the industry. So I'm involved in multiple industries. I would say I'm very involved in cars. I'm very involved in martial arts. I'm very involved in video games and airsoft and role playing. Okay. So I do a lot of stuff, but those are my major ones that I wouldn't consider just hobbies. Maybe lightsabers. I like to put those together. So when you look at these, they all have their different form factor in the way their fans interact, right? And I've talked about this on YouTube. It's more of a caustic reaction than on Twitch. I think there's a reason why that is. There's more of a different style of reaction for Airsoft than there is for D&D. Airsoft, let's say you go to a group who's very milsim, as in military simulator or simulation, it can be quite difficult to join a game like that because they'll be like, you need to have the proper patch. And sometimes you just want to go out and shoot somebody with a plastic pellet, right? So you get all those kinds. But to me, the uplifting ones are the fun that I've had within those. I'm going to bring up Airsoft and D&D and board games because you said gaming, but I'm not just going to talk about video games. So one of my favorite times ever was I surprised my friends with Airsoft. One of my friends had a birthday. I bought 3 guns. They were very cheap. And I hid them. And he came over with another friend. It was Cadiz and another friend of mine. And I said, go in the room and pick one of these 3 boxes. Both of you guys do this, and I'll pick the 3rd. We're going to go out and do this. And they had no clue what it was. Now, remembering that prior to that, it was always role-playing for us. It was never paintball. Well, once or twice for me. And it was more sedentary stuff. They weren't into martial arts, which was big in my life. And they saw these things, and they had just never heard of them. They're like, what the hell is this? Like, you can play, like, what are these? And, you know, go outside, and you shoot a couple, and you're like, these are accurate. Like, what? I've never even, you know, they had not even really thought of Airsoft before. This is about 12 years ago. And the enjoyment that we got that weekend, my back being sore, my feet vibrating with pain. I was in such pain from playing for so many hours. And I roll for hours on, you know, when we're doing martial arts or whatever and never have an issue. But bending down and all that shit, you know, your lower back is fucked up and you go to sleep in that kind of sleep that you're like, it's going to be hard to sleep because you're sore, but you know when you sleep, it'll be the sleep of the dead, right? You'll wake up 2,000 years in the future in a fucking sarcophagus because you were so deep in sleep. That was a great time, and it unleashed another decade of Airsoft enjoyment for us and getting people together for my birthdays, where in the past saying, hey, let's get together for video games. You know, people are like, video games are released all the time, where Airsoft was an event. So moving from there, role-playing and board games, we have so many thousands of D&D/role-playing stories I could not even begin to describe to you. And we don't always go, I see a lot of videos on Twitch and they're not really for me, to be honest. Most of the D&D games I see, there's far too much joking around. And I'm not saying you can't, by the way. I'm saying it seems like that's sort of a thing that fits more with Twitch and more. So ours were a little bit more real, a little bit more, I wouldn't say theatric, but I would just say a little bit, they were a little less for showing everybody else and a little bit more for us getting into the game, right? But we did have some hilarious ones, just absolutely stupid. And one of the games that we love to play, and it's probably my most uplifting D&D story, is a game we called Insane Asylum. And this was made when I was probably 14 by a neighbor friend. And we've played it since. And so you're talking 2 decades of playing this game. Basically, all it is it's very random. You just say you're 4 people or whoever's playing. The DM just basically says and explains to you waking up inside of what looks like a medical facility of some kind with no idea how you got there, why you got there. But what's cool is everybody can make their own reasons. So you'll have somebody who's like, and they only have like 30 seconds to 60 seconds to explain to me or the DM, not anybody else, what the reasoning is. So they may be like, I was a spy. Somebody else may be like, I saw psychic visions and they locked me up. Somebody else could say, I was a murderer and they locked me up. And then what the DM has to do, the person making the game, I do freeform games. So I rarely have anything written down. And we usually do 14 to 15 hour games on Saturdays. So all my stuff is freeform, like the podcasts. There's no, you know, other than names of characters, it's all what they do, what I think, how I think the game story should progress, how things work out. And so they'll tell me. So you usually have 4 people giving you 60 seconds of data, and it's up to the DM. And this is why I love this kind of stuff, because it's that tit for tat. It's the back and forth that I think exists in gaming with friends. It exists between you and a game, and it exists in role playing, where I would sit there and I would have 60 seconds to merge all this together. I would have 60 seconds to say, okay, why are all these things put together? And then I would give them a little note on any extra data. So one moment you might be like, okay, the spy has actually been following the person who's been having hallucinations, and he put himself in this hospital on purpose so that he could track him and get him in here to maybe kill him or maybe figure out what's going on. And then you'd be like, the murderer doesn't really realize it, but the visions that the person who's been having hallucinations are actually visions of him murdering people, right? And you mix them all together and you only have like 60 seconds before the game starts. And then everybody starts and it's all about escaping this medical facility / research facility / insane asylum. With whatever you can, bed sheets and bedpans and fucking things you can break off, you know, tables and just crazy. And it doesn't require any thought process to start those games. And I would say those are some of our favorites. We have a game right now that's gone on for, you know, 15 years. It's a blast. It's an amazing game. We've had people come and go, but we are very good about that game. But Insane Asylum is what we call it. When we just don't have a lot of brain power, right? When you're like, yeah, you know, I just don't want to get into a big thick game today. And somebody's like, you know what, man, let's do this. And you sit down with some dice, or we use playing cards for our dice system. You just sit down, you're like, let's do this. And usually those games end up being a mixture of violent and fun and action-packed and amazing memories of weird shit that happens because it's so impromptu. But I'd like to know what your guys' are. Feel free. If you get a chance and you got this far, I don't even know how far we are. I'm not really looking at the time frame. If you get this far, you can post something like, you know, hashtag my stories. Or how about this? Hashtag my gaming stories. And give me what you have as a cool story, an uplifting moment. These are all really good. You know, I would say gaming as a whole is uplifting for me. There's certainly some issues, but I do my best to sort of separate myself from those, because in real life, I've experienced or seen things far worse than anything gaming can really deliver. So to me, it's usually easy to see the good and the bad and not really be all clamped, all tight about it. Let's see. So we got some more topics. These are from our podcast group, a huge podcast group. Holy shit. Let's see. We're going to go through these fast because we got to be over 30 minutes. Indio says, what's your favorite demon in Doom Eternal battle mode? I haven't done it enough. I'm sure you're going to argue with me anyway and say Marauder. I'm just joking. He already said that. It's just because I hated the Marauder in the main game. But I hear he isn't very useful in the multiplayer game. So I'll jump into that and check. Dopey Joe says, do you think that the success of Half-Life Alyx will encourage more AAA developers to make high quality VR games? Okay, guys. So we talked about this before. A lot of the situations that we see in gaming are based upon the resources that are available. Additionally, the PR clout prior. This is Half-Life, guys, right? This is Half-Life 2. It's a big deal. And as long as it wasn't going to be a mobile game, as long as it wasn't going to be a standalone game you buy on a handheld in a fucking, you know, hospital ward, it was going to probably do well if Valve was putting the resources behind it. Will it change the landscape single-handedly? No. There will possibly be a dev who says, let's do this because of Half-Life Alyx, but I don't think that one dev changes the world. I don't even think 10 devs deciding they want to do that changes the world. However, Half-Life Alyx is a title that is added to a sort of hidden secret place that people don't really realize VR has right now. VR is getting more and more games. VR is offering more and more unique experiences. VR also costs more than people want to put out. One of the biggest issues with Half-Life Alyx is I had multiple people saying, well, I don't have the index, so I can't play it. I'm like, Jesus, what are you talking about? WMR is $150. And I have all of them. WMRs, I've got the Rift, I've got I had the index, I returned it, and I've got the Reverb. And I got to tell you right now, like, those WMR work great as long as you have good light in your system. I'll just say this, great enough for almost any game in the Steam library. So you're talking maybe four games I've had issues with in hundreds upon hundreds of games. Yet at the same time, it is $850 less. So if you are thinking of getting into Half-Life Alyx and you are worried about cost, worry less about cost if you're okay spending $100 or more on a headset, but don't want to spend, let's say, $500 or more, and then start looking at it. But don't assume the index is required. I tried to make that very clear in my review. It absolutely is not. In fact, for me, higher FOV did not change my experience with Half-Life Alyx nearly as much as the Reverb's insanely high resolution, which made the game look like a desktop title. Good times, though, and I hope to see it. What are your first impressions of the revised Breakpoint? So if anybody doesn't know, Breakpoint released this cool revision where it allows for you to really adjust the way you want to experience the game, the old style or a new style of experience of the game, which allows for you to get rid of the gear system pretty much completely and all the leveling and the rare and all that bullshit. So it also has more options in how you can set up the overall game and the experience. For me personally, it is vital and has helped tremendously. Does it make the game worth getting or does it raise my rating? Not at that price point that it was offered at. Depends on what its price point is now. But I would say what it does do is it does mitigate a lot of the stupid shit that used to happen. It doesn't mitigate the AI. Guys, the AI in this game ain't great. The world creation in this game isn't really great. But it allows for you to get rid of a good amount of the bullshit, right? And including what was for everybody, I think, a really convoluted inventory system. So far, so good. I need to play it more. All right, next up is Dexter of Rahali, which is a H.P. Lovecraft reference. Everyone was saying that this was going to be the year for VR before the virus hit. One, did you agree with this statement? No. Two, do you think that this can still be the year to whatever extent you believed it was going to be? Yes, I do. Three, if you answered yes to one but no to two, do you think it'll be a hit next year? So ignoring all that, I'll just say, do I think it'll be a hit next year? I think that we will continue to see people jump into it, but the companies need to fix one of two things. HP and Index now, as of yesterday, announced their new headset, technically called the Reverb G2, but we don't know exactly its specifics. Price is the biggest. People, if something is cheap, they'll deal with uncomfort like the wire. If something is expensive, they want no issues with comfort. I think that that's pretty much normal. That is the way we do it. That's why luxury cars are luxury cars for a reason. They have a luxurious feeling to them. And that's the way headsets should be. I would love to see them get those prices down to $350 to $400 for the luxury headsets. And then the WMR $150 price for the basic headsets. at that point, you are getting to a situation where if people feel like they want to jump in, to them, it is a new platform, which VR is. Don't let anybody tell you VR isn't its own platform. It absolutely is, but allows them to get into it with the cost of what technically would be a console or a, let's say, an upgrade on a lower end video card. 400 would be the, you know, that. Good question, though. Sidebar, did the virus neuter the boost to VR that half the... Okay. He's just saying all the same stuff. Okay, Dexter is asking some games. Okay. Sorry, just reading all of these. We have a bunch in there, and now we'll jump over to here and look at topics. All right. Have I continued to play Neo 2? So I'll say this. Neo 2, I have. I've really enjoyed Neo 2. I've tried to get a couple people to jump in online with me in co-op, and nobody has really jumped in yet. So that's what I'm waiting for. Good question. Swamp Donkey says, if Sony does get the rights to, okay, we know that they're not getting the rights, Swamp. I did answer that at the starting. Sorry, I just saw his question pop up. So after all that, all those answers, let me discuss to you something very cool. I want to talk about the VR Half-Life and why I think there is a reason people are talking about it that has nothing to do with Half-Life itself. And I think that is easily described as the fact that this is a horror game. But what it is a horror game with good shooting elements and good world building built in. One of the problems with a lot of VR games is their experience games, and their cost and their resources available usually restrict them to one genre overall. Horror, right? Or shooting, Contractors, Pavlov, that kind of stuff. Or an experience game, Batman. Rarely do we get a game that's all of them. And in fact, when we do, it's usually a game that was already an original title on a pancake version, such as Skyrim or Fallout 4. I would fight anybody if they said that those two games are not improved in VR, because the honest truth is I liked them both, but I have had a great time in the VR versions of both of those, despite them both having great, great, great difficulty coming out and running well. I talked about this in my reviews. So you guys know how harshly I've felt about those titles when they came out in review. They have really stepped it up. They're good titles. But we have all these titles there, and many of them, if they're not these full-fledged games on the pancake version, you do get a situation where they feel like they're one thing. Maybe they're two. Maybe they're a little bit of experience, some shooting, maybe some horror and shooting, but it's not all put together. Half-Life does a great job. However, I want to point out something that Half-Life VR does not do, and that I think a lot of people would be surprised in. Half-Life 1 had a great intro. Half-Life 2, I think, had a great intro. Half-Life VR, its intro is action, but it's not good. So let me describe that. So Half-Life 1, you got the tram, right? It's probably one of the most coveted beginnings to a title that has ever been created. It signaled in the ability to make a person feel a part of something while having a cutscene that actually made sense and sort of stratified, it sort of solidified, I guess, the gamer in the game world and showed them places that they would go. It's that mixing I've talked about in The Walking the Walks, where people feel like it's the past and the present and the present and the past all coming together. And this is going to be your future, though, that you're going through. So as you're going through it, you're leaving the past behind. You're seeing this thing. The present is the tram ride, looking around, looking out the windows. The future is half of these places you're seeing, so much so that you actually get to see characters from the next game, the Barney one. What was that? Strike something. Sorry, I can't remember the name. So what happens with VR Half-Life is nothing, nada. You basically just start out on your deck. It's fine starting. It's just not the Half-Life style starting that I expected. You just start out on your deck and then shit hits the fan and you're kidnapped and then you're jailbroken and then you're working for the resistance. It was 1, 2, 3. And the game turned out great anyway, but it was 1, 2, 3. And I think that was quite interesting. Looking at the game, though, I want to say I think there's a reason why this game is seeing success, where even if you remove the Half-Life part somehow and change the name, it would probably continue to see success. And there's three real reasons. One, they make the game look as close to a pancake version as possible. They really do. A pancake, sorry, being the flat screen that we would normally see, a normal version of a game. The resolution is insanely high, and the ability to get this thing looking good is absolutely phenomenal. Additionally, the number of special effects and particle systems and different systems at play that they have graphically will show regardless of the resolution. So if you have a 1080p pancake game, we know, if you turn it up to 4K, your resolution goes up, but that doesn't magically mean you're going to see better lighting. That's only if you go in and adjust those settings. Well, in a lot of VR games, that actually always starts out not looking the greatest because those special effects have to be drawn twice. And so what'll happen is a lot of game companies will actually allow you to adjust the resolution, but the effects will be somewhat pared down on those games because those effects, especially like alpha transparencies or something like that, can be insanely expensive on a VR system. Half-Life's not like that. Half-Life, the design of the game is designed in a way to offer you the best overall visuals that they can offer to make it look like a normal game, but still be in VR. And that is unbelievably noticeable when you're playing it. It is phenomenal looking. I was showing it to people who were here when I was reviewing it, and I had this thing cranked and it ran really well on the Reverb and all the other systems, but I was showing people the Reverb because of the high resolution on that system. It's so far beyond anything else that it's hard to go back to anything. And I was showing them it and people were just like, it almost doesn't look like any other VR game that's available. And it character models, all that, because, you know, you get Skyrim and you can throw some mods in there, but everything from the polygons of the characters' bodies, other than Better Body, what is that, BBB, the mod for Better Bodies? I can't remember the name. Other than that, you know, you still see issues with animation and issues with the jankiness because it's Skyrim, right? And you see the same thing with Fallout. You know, you can make a character look great, but if they still walk around like they've got a fucking wooden pole shoved up their ass, you'll just be like, all right, it looks good, but the animation's weird. Half-Life Alyx is not that way. Half-Life Alyx looks like it is made with current gen tech for current gen VR to look as good as current gen 4K normal screens. And that is a huge bonus. Additionally, I think they nailed the horror. I think they nailed it. The idea that you have this little flashlight on your fucking arm, which means everywhere you point that arm, it's going to actually send the light. You're going to be able to see nothing else. I got to tell you right now, when you're in the deep, dank, 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 dank ass caverns, right? You're just in the colon of the universe down there and you can hear the water dripping and you see a bad guy and you see him move around something and you look and you're like, holy shit, my weapon's only got one bullet left. And you go to reload and the light goes from where the enemy was to like the sky because you're reaching with your left arm over your shoulder to grab those bullets. Holy shit, it's nailed. Holy shit, it's nailed. And it's nailed because also VR can handle that darkness and the cramped confines better than a pancake version because you're only seeing what your eyes can see. Any game we play normally, you're seeing far more than a person can see. We see that in third-person games. It's one of the reasons why in a lot of shooters, they'll call it like third-person, you know, wall cheating or wall viewing where you go up to a wall and you sort of turn so you can get around it. We can't do that in VR. And that same thing occurs in the moments in Half-Life Alyx, and they are done to phenomenal, phenomenal results. Okay, just looking at questions, Swamp Donkey changed his question to, how would Animal Crossing be received if it was a horror game? That is awesome. I don't know. You know, we were talking about Animal Crossing earlier. Not 100% sure, you know, Animal Crossing's for me. I'm a big Sims fan. I love those kind of games. And herbs for the consoles years ago. I like that kind of stuff. But for some reason, Animal Crossing hasn't really come across my desk and made me be like, wow, this is worth crying over, which I've seen. Just so far, it hasn't. And I was talking to a group of patrons and YouTubers in a discussion last night, in a video discussion, and somebody said, you know, it's weird. Animal Crossing, if it was any other title without the name Animal Crossing, if these kind of mundane activities were in a normal game by somebody else, especially, let's say, an EA or an Activision, they would be absolutely lambasted for how little is actually going on all the time. And I would have to say, I don't agree with that as a holistic experience, but if you do break up some of those activities, I do agree with that. I think Nintendo's, I said this in my Discord, I think Nintendo's name is a power word, like Mordib from Doom. It's like you just utter it and it means more. There's also more expectations though, right? So if this Animal Crossing didn't deliver, at least I guess I would say technically in a proficient way, we would hear a huge outcrying of fans. So it goes both ways, right? It goes with both ways. I think that though, if you deal in this kind of stuff, this open world life sim, and you do it competently, you're in pretty good shape. And Animal Crossing seems to be that. So I think a lot of people enjoy it, which is great. It's just so far has not really been for me. Holy shit. I just checked the time. So it's almost an hour. I don't know how much longer I'll go, but I will describe a couple things. So people who, you know, where they may be at home, I don't know where you are or something like that, and you just listen to me. You're on a car ride. One of the few people who can still drive who's considered, what are they considered, like required jobs or something like that. It, you know, when it comes to these things, I don't do them. I don't do a ton of these very often just because of how busy I am and stuff like that. But I definitely do like doing just the audio podcast when I get a chance, because like right now I can stand up and it's no big deal. Oh, which I absolutely love. Feels comfortable. But when it comes to the coronavirus itself and people who are having issues with it, I just want to say, remember, there's a bunch of people out there who are having those issues. You know, always feel free to reach out, you know, to others. It is rough. And I was just talking to somebody. I don't think they'd be cool if I told them what happened, but, or if I told them, you guys, who they are, but basically they had family, you know, coming in to meet up with them for a completely unrelated issue. And because of all this, they quite literally are stuck there for months. And that's the thing that I think we all forget. And it's easy. This is something I was just telling somebody a couple days ago. It's like, you know, as you go on with life, there's always going to be somebody who doesn't like you, or somebody who likes you and you don't like them, you know, vice versa, that kind of stuff. There's always going to be hardships we deal with. But one of the things to remember is that everybody deals with hardships, and, you know, you won't always know. I would never have known that this person was dealing with this. And it wasn't necessarily a hardship, but it was a unique thing, right? Because it was two people in a space for one person, right? And I'll just say, not the same sex of person, and they're stuck there. That's a huge deal. That's sort of a game changer in life. That's something that you can't control. And that's one of the things I was trying to tell people, is we are living in history. 200 years from now, if we're still around, if humans are still around on this fucking ball of dirt, you will be able to grab, you know, some kind of brain link that's replaced the internet. I don't know what we'll call it. I'm gonna sit down now, but you will be able to jump on and you will be able to read about this and how it changed the world. Even if it doesn't fully change everything from, you know, the way financials are done, the way people work at home, it changed the world for a small amount of time where people were just absolutely stuck, you know, and could not go anywhere, and the hardships they dealt with. Everybody's dealing with hardships. And my hope is, not that this is a positive, because like I said earlier, there's no positive to this, but my hope is people come out of this with a little bit more understanding of what it's like to have some hardships outside of gaming. I mean, I'm not trying to be rude, because I know people think it comes off. I've even had people be like, that sounds like a bad attitude towards gaming, when I say that nothing matters less, really. But there's no other way to say it. When you look at real life, very few things matter enough for you to, let's say, be verklempt about it and be on the internet just ready to hit the reply button if somebody does something you don't like. We're in a situation that is world changing. And I think what we should do is make it pleasurable so that everybody wants to engage in it while the outside life is difficult. And some people don't have a difficult outside life, and for maybe the first time in their lives really are because of all this. And I think that instead of all these dividing lines, it's probably better to sort of concentrate on some good stuff for a while. Does that mean I won't, you know, bitch about a company if I don't like what they're doing, like GameStop? No, not at all. Of course I will. I'm just saying that overall, there are times where it sort of makes you look and go, okay, does this matter? Like, what matters more, this or this? And sometimes you know, especially when you live through something, you're like, yeah, probably not this. Like, for example, I've broken bones, but I've also had cancer. Which is worse? Well, I think you all know which is worse. So one pops up and you're like, yeah, that fucking sucks. But if the other one popped up again, you'd be like, all right, this is a real issue. And I just think, and I hope that with gamers, we'll start doing that, because sometimes I see stuff and I'm like, it's fucking nuts, man. It's nuts. And I'm not talking about the occasional time you piss somebody off. That shit happens. Like, whatever. I'm just talking about people just being really jackasses to each other. And, you know, console wars. I was talking to a patron, what was it, 2 weeks ago? And I was saying that, you know, we were just discussing like what goes on in life. And I was like, you know, I was explaining the different things that are occurring right now that can cause angst. You know, it was like the virus, console wars, angst as in all areas of life. You try to go to one place to retreat and there's issues over there. You try to go to this other place. But, I also do believe it's a time, to come together, a time to check out, you know, Twitch, a time to read more, a time to engage with family. Hopefully people care a little bit more about where their loved ones are. You know, if maybe it's easy to grow apart. I definitely did with my parents. I lived close to my parents for years. And even when I moved out, I was going there and staying on the weekends because my parents are fucking rocking, dude. Like, it's crazy. Everybody I know liked my parents. Like, they were legit hilarious and very respectful of us as adults, or me, at least as an adult. I think with my brother, who was before me, he had some issues, and maybe they looked at me and were like, geez, as long as he's not burning shit down, this kid's cool. But I grew apart from him a little bit in the last couple of years. And so I've noticed myself going like, hey man, you know, I should probably give him a call and be like, hey, you guys okay? Because they're of an age where this is worrisome. I had a coworker die from the virus, and they died 2 weeks ago, ex-coworker, I apologize. So ex-coworker. And this person was one of the people that mentored me in my last job. And they weren't even at my company. They were somebody I dealt with, a secondary company, but they were somebody that was so easygoing and made that stress go away. When I was dealing with them, and I dealt with them on a fucking daily basis, and to find out they passed was just one of those things where you're like, wow, okay, so this hits home. This is a person, you know, I absolutely know. And that was 2 weeks ago. There's been even more. But I think we should all probably remember that shit. And it's tough, man. It's tough. I hope you guys are all doing well. If you ever need anything, you can always feel free to tweet at me. I can't say that I'll be able to respond to everything. It's tough, man. It's tough for people. And I feel pretty damned happy with myself because I have joked about this before. I've joked about it in the podcast. I'm a late night purchaser. So I'll be on Amazon and be like, you know what I need? I need a fucking pair of like purple Nikes for no reason. Like, that's just the way I've been all my life. And for years, when I was making really good money at the job prior to YouTube, I was getting a lot of survival gear, and not for anything other than the airsoft I mentioned before, you know, so, you know, everything to camping, right? And that's helped me a lot during this time because, you know, if you lose power, it's like we're set for that. We lose electricity, boom, we're set for that. You know, some food stores and stuff like that, just in case we need a snack and you go somewhere and there's nothing in a restaurant, or sorry, nothing in a store, boom, we're set for that. But a lot of people aren't there, and just remember that. And if you are doing well, you know, might be a time to donate. There's crazy shit going on. People are losing their homes and stuff like that. And I think gamers, we have a tendency to collect shit. You know, maybe go and look at donating some of that. I will tell you an awesome, I don't consider this an awesome story. It was an awesome feeling. I have for years collected, you know, toys, almost like what you guys would collect, but not from premium versions of video games, but just over the years, toys, box toys. Like, I liked Mask when I grew up, Transformers, that kind of stuff. So, you know, you've got some sitting around. And one day we were looking at this room and I was like, I got to get rid of this shit. I got to get rid of this shit because in no way, shape or form is this required for me to have. So we packaged some of it up, and it wasn't a ton. It was a big box, but you know, some, and a lot of my stuff is nice. I'll buy it and I'll be like, you know, I'm not going to play with it much, or most stuff I open, I don't really believe in buying something and putting it on the fucking shelf. I think that's creepy. That's like living in a fucking museum, right? Of toys, which is just fucking haunting. I play with that shit and break it. Or have it out and put somewhere and then the dogs break it, but whatever. So I packaged up the non-broken stuff and we took it in. And one of the people there was saying, oh, thank God you brought this in. We just had a homeless mom in here for a kid's birthday. And they were trying to figure out a present under $5, that they could give. And the kid was wanting this toy and they had the number. The parent had actually said, call the shelter and tell them, you know, because the kid was turning 12, I think. And it was a small toy, by the way, but it was awesome. And I got to see the direct line. So sometimes you'll donate and you don't see where it goes. And I think that's where cynicism can crop up. You'd be like, oh man, well, that means it goes nowhere, or they're selling it on eBay. I always check to make sure that shit's not going on, and I know how to check for it. But I think for the most part, a lot of people are good and they do want to help people and it feels good. But it also, it's happened to me. You know, it's happened to me with bosses who've helped me out. It's happened to my first, oh man, when I started my first job, I think I told you guys this, but I started my first job and I was working for a military dude. And I wasn't going home at that time because I was working my ass off. And you're supposed to be really clean cut, no beards, fucking crew cut, that kind of stuff. And I was smoking around there with a fucking, I mean, I was pretty much Billy Ray Cyrus at this point. And my boss comes over and he just looks at me. He's like, man, you fucking look like a mess, dude. He's like, here's $5. Go down. What was this barbershop? I can't remember the barbershop's name, but he's like, go down and get a fucking haircut. They were fairly militant at this job. So he helped me, you know, and it sounds stupid. Like some people be like, well, he helped you, you know, so that you'd better fit in with the job. Yeah, but he helped me in a point where he didn't have to. He could have just been like, boom, I'm writing that kid up, right? Because I was a fucking punk. I was an 18-year-old punk. There was absolutely no investment on his part into me. He could have replaced me, and there was a churning line of stupid 18-year-olds with hard dicks right behind me who would have loved to have worked that same job. There was no reason for him to invest in me. There was no reason for him to help me out. There was no reason for him to do it, especially with no actual, demanding for a return of any kind. But he did. And I think that's worthwhile now. And so you should, if you get a chance, donate. You know, if you have board games sitting around, donate. There's a lot of people out there who aren't going to be able to pay for their internet. And I don't want this to be a chiding session, because I know somebody's going to be like, why do you talk about donations? Blah, blah, blah. If you're saying that right now, turn the fucking goddamn podcast off. Because there comes a time when I'm not going to apologize for spending 30 minutes to an hour talking about helping people out. And if you have an issue with that, fuck you. Go. Like, that kind of stuff is stupid. You should help people out. And there's many ways to do it. Donations. You can't really donate your time as much anymore to like soup kitchens or to helping, you know, volunteer, but you can certainly donate items. And I would say, yeah, definitely do it. Definitely do it. Actually, I think what we'll do is we're going to sort of wrap it up here. Like I said, go ahead and put, what did I say? The Twitter tag. I think it was My Game Stories. Feel free to do that and write out your stories here. But also, if you want something discussed in the podcast about video games, feel free to put the next topic on there. I'll try to do it. I don't know how often I'm going to do these. You also might be wondering why you're seeing random people on Twitch stream. Well, they're not random. Citizen Sleeve has been a part of the Discord for about 4 years. And so we just started talking about it. And I'm like, listen, you know, if you're one of those people affected by the virus and you don't have anything to do, you can feel free to stream. You know, and we'll worry about all the other stuff later. I'm just that kind of person. And if it comes back to bite me, fuck, whatever. It comes back to bite me. I mean, what the fuck are you going to do, right? I don't do sponsors. But now, will that change? That's the big question. So people have been asking me that, and I figured we'd end with it. Will I do sponsors? First of all, I got to say, never on reviews. No. On Twitch, I have talked to people about like possibly doing sponsors on his streams. On sleeve streams, you know, starting sponsors, especially as multiple people have to leave Patreon and we're getting less views. So I think I talked about this in the podcast. You guys definitely need to check out The Completionist. He did a video about what's going on with YouTube right now. This has nothing to do with analytics, by the way, or nothing to do with cussing, not the normal analytical stuff. What's basically going on is there's just something really weird going on. I don't know any other way to say it. We've had Forbes and Time Magazine both put out stuff in February, I think, where they said the numbers seem weird, like completely not what they were expecting with people imbibing their stuff. The same thing has absolutely happened to me. Huge difference in the amount, in the turnout of people watching the stuff. And I was like, okay, maybe it's, first of all, I found out YouTube fucked up the notifications bell. All right. So I'll talk about that in a couple of videos. Second, maybe they don't want to watch me anymore. It's totally fine. But I was like looking at the numbers going, this is weird. This is a pretty substantial number who aren't showing up, not only for mine, but then I started looking at the views on other videos about particular games. I'm like, wait, like what? The views are well off. And they were off before anything with the virus. So I was sitting there going like, what can this be? And I've been pondering this and talking about it in podcasts for months. And out of the blue last week, Completionist did a big video and he was just like, I have no fucking clue what's happening. That is where I am. So, you know, we'll keep the Patreon going for sure. Love people in the Discord, but that costs people money. So some people, you know, won't be able to do that. And I've looked at it. I'm like, well, maybe it is time that for that side stuff, you know, we make it clear that it's like, you know, if it's a sponsorship, that's not a game, if it's a fucking energy drink, right? Or an awesome tentacle dildo, maybe it's time to just do a sponsor because, you know, to pay for things because it gets crazy. We were breaking down my amounts so that people know I'm really open with what I make or don't make, unfortunately. But because I don't do sponsorships of any kind, just to give you a good example, I have to pay, you know, in internet just like everybody else, but I do have to do business so I can upload at proper speeds, all that kind of stuff. So I've got, you know, your business internet, your electricity, and then every game. And then I look at the games and how many I purchase in a month, and it can be, you know, that can easily be in the 300 to 700 range, depending on if I buy the game new, where I get it from. And of course, if I get it off the street broken, which they charge much more. A company may charge, or, you know, a person off the street, if you're trying to get a street broke game, because you don't get a review code. You know, I've paid $500 for a game before, which I never will again, by the way. I did it one time because I knew the review would probably pay off, and it did barely. But that's the thing. Videos are not paying. They're just not. The view, it's crazy. Even if the viewership's good, even the CPM's good, the numbers, it's just not paying off. And unless you're a drama channel, which even they, from what I hear from a couple people, even drama channels are having issues now. Things are really adjusting to where it's almost like you have to be a YouTube, I don't even know what you'd call it. You have to be huge already, right? Or a YouTube, you know, person already to do well. So yeah, we've talked about it. I just haven't really pulled the trigger because I haven't found anything, but I'll tell everybody if we decide to do it on Twitch. You know, it might just be something that's starting, because when you listen to this, I did the fake sponsor, but you should also hear, I think we have a sponsorship for Spotify, right? Yeah. Spotify and maybe iTunes, or maybe it's Anchor itself. Those are because it's Anchor. Yeah. So Anchor and Spotify. Well, those are two that I actually use, and they're connected to the podcast, right? So something like that. I haven't decided. Somebody said Audible, but I don't see how anybody's making any money on Audible, where everybody's got their own fucking sponsorship for Audible. I've thought about energy drinks or something like that, or condoms with my face at the end, just a big old beard at the end. The Carrick Tickler. But yeah, if you have any topics or things you want to discuss, if you have any suggestions, feel free to pop them in here. We're at 1 hour and I don't know. Something more than 1 hour. I would love for you guys to pop off and say what you think. If you get a chance, guys, I'm not joking, man. Spread it wherever you can. It absolutely does help. That's what I was discussing, is like the expenses for a channel are pretty outrageous, because all my expenses include those games, hardware, that kind of stuff, the street broke stuff. It not doing the sponsorships and not seeing video views. It's pretty crazy. It's insanely low. And that's why I don't really have an issue telling people about Discord anymore and Patreon, because I'm just like, you know what, if I don't, it's just going to fucking go away, because people progressively come in and out on their own. But if you don't mention it, far less people will come in. Like, and I've tested that. It's a weird time. And I suggest, you know, if you don't like me, but you are in good financials and you want to, you know, help somebody, feel free to help them out. I watch a guy, and you guys can see me live. You can see who I donate to. I've made that clear. Somebody was telling me a couple of days ago, they're like, I can see who you're a patron of. Do you want that? Because what if you're a patron of porn? And I'd be like, number one, I would have no issue with that if there's somebody I liked. Number two, I want people to see that, because I do believe in feeding back into the same group. If I trust them. In review of the week, that dude's awesome. He reviews food, and he's talking about what he's going to do, because he doesn't want to go and grab a bunch of food from stores if people are sick at the store. So he's like, what do I do? And he's like, maybe I'll review frozen foods and stuff. But that guy, you know, if you want amazing videos, he's just this, you know, mild-mannered kid who eats food and reviews it. And I don't know why. I've been a patron of his for a long time. He's spectacular, man. He's spectacular. I love that kind of stuff. And I think that feeding back into the, you know, you hear that a lot of times, and you'll see it a lot of times on Twitter, people being like, yeah, we're buddy, buddy. And you'd be like, okay, are you really, are you on each other's Patreon? Like, really, are you putting, even if it's $5, are you really putting your money where your mouth is? Probably not. And that's one of the things that I've always really held as being important, is like, there's a difference between me saying good job and me saying here's $5 and good job. And I have no issue with that, even with friends. I'm a patron of Maddie's, and I will be forever. It makes no sense. It just makes no sense not to. It's the weirdest thing. But anyway, if you get a chance, help some people out. Go out there, donate, give some items, that kind of stuff. I think we're going to wrap it up here. I absolutely appreciate everybody stopping by. If you got this far, hey, you guys, you're lovely people. I absolutely appreciate it. If you didn't get this far, you can't hear me call you a complete jackass. I'm just joking. You're not. Everybody who is listening, peace out and enjoy. What are we looking at? It's Tuesday. Enjoy the rest of your week.